You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
Welcome, Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Today on Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, we've got two extremely special guests, Sister Alice Gerdeman of the Congregation of Divine Providence of Kentucky. She's a long-term educator, advocate for peace and justice issues, and coordinator of the Intercommunity Justice and Peace Center in Cincinnati. We've also got Sister Quincy Hauer of the Cincinnawa Dominican Sisters. I'm going to ask you if I got that right in just a second, who works in community development, disaster recovery, and resilience planning, environmental advocacy, and policy analysis. They both come to us from Network Lobby for Social Justice, which is a national Catholic advocacy organization working to shape federal policies to achieve racial, economic, and social justice. They're on the show today to talk about a tour they're taking part in right now called Nuns on the Bus, Vote Our Future Tour. It's a 2.5-week nationwide bus tour that goes all the way from Philadelphia to San Francisco. And yesterday, they had a stop in our very own Milwaukee. Sisters, it's great to have you on our show. Thank you for making time.
Thank you so much, Maggie. Wonderful. Wonderful to be here.
Let's just start off. I remember Nuns on the Bus from a couple of election cycles ago. What is the Nuns on the Bus tour, and what are you and your fellow sisters trying to accomplish?
Well, I actually think this is our eighth Nuns on the Bus. One was virtual, because we all know why that happened for a few years ago. The purpose of it is simply to call people to realize what are some of the issues that they need to be thinking about, and not to be concentrated on just one, but to look at everything from a moral, ethical point of view, and to consider everybody so that everybody benefits from what happens in our extremely important elections, and every one of those elections is.
That's seems right. To me, sisters, that's about a fundamental return to some of our first principles, not just as Americans, but as people, and that is to look out for one another. And that when we all do better, that's good for us as individuals as well. When most people think of nuns, I doubt they think of a bunch of nuns on a bus talking about political, racial, and economic social justice. How did both of you get into advocacy work like this?
Well, I started out joining my congregation in my late 30s. So I had a full professional career behind me at that point. And right after taking my first vows, I traveled to Washington, D.C. to work for Network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice as my first ministry, and learned how to lobby on the Hill at the same time that I learned what it means to be a Catholic sister. I grew my sea legs really in Washington, D.C., working on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That's how I learned to do lobbying and advocacy. So it is near and dear to my heart. Is probably the opposite of what I should be saying, but it hits close to home, so to speak. I worked for Network for several years after that, and now I'm living in Wisconsin, which is obviously one of the battleground states, and I'm having a very different experience of how to do advocacy, really with my neighbors and the folks that I work and rub elbows with in rural Wisconsin. So it's been an interesting change.
And my story is pretty much different. I'm obviously a little older than Quincy, and I started out as an elementary school teacher and then as a principal. And I was part of those, what I consider to be the early justice and peace things, like the boycott of lettuce and those kinds of things, which I did as a sideline while I was doing all of the educational parts. I also, some of the schools that I taught in were schools that had kids that had great needs and families that had great needs. And, you know, when you're a teacher and you're surrounded by kids who need something, your initial thought is, how can I get it? And it wasn't only social service agencies. There weren't a whole lot of them back in the 70s. But it was also, look, there's some things holding people back. How can I get these kids to use their marvelous talents in some way? And then my religious community in 1973, about the same time Network was starting, we decided as a group that we wanted to work for justice. And then we came to the realization we had no clue how that was going to work. We didn't know what that meant exactly. And I was sent out to find out and to help bring the other sisters on board in whatever way that we could possibly do it out of our own experience and our own convictions, so that the world became a better place.
I would just say, I think it was a shift with women religious around that time that Alice is talking about, where they realized you charity service, direct service in the community can only go so far, and that there are systemic issues that are resulting in the needs that we see. So Network Lobby was really the sisters' effort to focus on the federal level policies that could make a difference in the need that we were seeing on the ground.
And I was sent to a summer institute with Network in Washington, D.C. to get those basic skills of lobbying and to understand a little bit about the federal programs and the access points that we could do back in Kentucky.
I did not realize that. I just became an extra fangirl of Sister Alice.
I love it.
I was one of the first, but
you
early
were
on.
One of the first.
Early on. Yes.
That's formative days.
Folks, those are Sisters Alice Gerdeman and Sister Quincy Howard. They're both part of the Network Lobby for Social Justice. Now, nuns on the bus going coast to coast to fight for economic, racial, and social justice. Ladies, I was raised in Catholic schools. I went to church every weekend. I was blessed to go to one of Milwaukee's most liberal parishes, and really firsthand saw not just the work that nuns did in direct service in community, but this nascent movement of nuns advocating and engaging in political advocacy to address these systemic issues. So my deep thanks. You all have always been on the front lines, and you continue to do what anybody would be compelled to call God's work in service. Thank you. What was your experience? Go ahead, Sister Alice.
One of the things, as you said it, it's like, you know, we are in a privileged place, because when Sister Quincy doesn't do it and I don't do it just because of my interests or my talents, we have a corporate body behind us of women who've had all kinds of experiences, and we share those experiences and we cherish those experiences. And so we can bring a voice that has a whole lot of experience of all kinds of problems and good things to the forefront.
That's
and
right.
To let, I just remember in the early years when I was working, when I was in a senator's office, and I was, you know, he wasn't going to pay attention to me. I was going to talk to one of his aides, but he came in and he sat down and he said, you know, I always like to read the letters I get from the sisters, because they don't ask me for something that was wrong.
That's an incredibly powerful work to get Sisters Alice Gerdeman. We are having some minor technical difficulties. Please bear with us as we reboot some web browsers and get everything moving again.
Ladies, can you hear me?
Sure. Yes.
Wonderful. What I was about to say was, I've always been struck by those who enter service, whether it's service through a religious vocation, or public service who truly do it because they are centering the needs of others, not doing it for personal aggrandizement or the personal acquisition of power and influence. You both are certainly exemplars of what is truly service to others. What was your experience yesterday in Milwaukee like, ladies?
Well, I was in Milwaukee and we were at Mount Mary University.
Yes.
And I must say it was beautiful and it was welcoming. All the way from a young woman who was there who was a sophomore who said, "You're going to like it here because, you know, this is a caring community. We're well-knit. Welcome." And some former nuns on the bus who came up and said, "Your life is going to be changed by the people here and the experience that you're having." And then we had, I would say, 200 people come to our forum that night. And people were engaged, very engaged, and very enthusiastic, not only to collect new information, or maybe not totally new, but little nuances of the information that they had, but also to be in the presence of a group of people, all of whom want to make the world a better place, and all who have energy to do this, and all who are multi-issue voters. I think just about every one of them was, probably a few exceptions, but that whole feel of excitement and caring was just so evident.
Sister Quincy, as Sister Alice was alluding to, Nuns on the Bus and the Network Lobby for Social Justice, you've got a whole range of issues that you're focused on. We on this show tend to focus on economic justice. So let's dive right in there. We've got just about a minute before we've got to take our first break. Do you think that the current structure of our economy reflects your faith or Christianity more broadly?
No, I do not. I think that we have completely missed the mark in the United States. And I feel like capitalism is not an evil system inherently, but I do feel like it is unhinged at this point in our history, and it is making Americans commodities or consumers or burdens to society. There are labels that we're attaching to people that don't recognize their dignity, and it adds also, you make products from housing, you make products from what pay is for people. So there's this capitalist model that is really taking over what we see as human dignity and the soul of the American people.
We're going to dig in more with Sisters Alice Gerdeman and Sister Quincy Howard, Nuns on the Bus Fighting for Economic and Social Justice, when we come back this very special episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, y'all. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're in the 3 o'clock hour, and that means it's Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. I'm not talking to two millionaires today. I'm talking to two women who have dedicated their lives to others. Sisters Alice Gerdeman and Sister Quincy Howard, both part of the Network Lobby for Social Justice, which was founded in 1972. It's an inclusive national Catholic advocacy organization open to all who share the values of economic, racial, social, and environmental justice. They are part of the Nuns on the Bus national tour. They were in Milwaukee yesterday. We're just digging into economic justice. And sisters, everyone that is a working person in this country knows that it has gotten more and more expensive to raise a family in America these days, that more and more people feel like they just cannot get ahead as they look at rising housing costs, childcare costs. How should people be thinking about these sorts of issues as they decide who they're voting for this November? Sister Quincy, let's start with you, if you don't mind.
Sure. Well, I would just say that The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, I think, is one good piece of information to remember for folks to remember, because this was the tax bill that was passed in 2017, and it has contributed to a lot of the pain that middle and lower income houses are feeling these days. It was sold as a tax cut to the middle class. That was far from what it was. It cut obscene amounts of money from corporate coffers and from the wealthiest in our nation. I think that folks should remember what administration that happened under. And then I would encourage them to look at the Inflation Reduction Act, which happened under the Biden-Harris administration, which actually started peeling back a little bit of that. For example, it gave funding to the IRS, which had been badly underfunded for years, and allowed them to recoup $1.3 billion in unpaid tax from tax cheats. And it's these kinds of funds in our coffers as a country that can be redistributed in ways that some would call socialism. I would call equal distribution to help people meet their basic needs. And these are the kinds of policies that we have seen Biden and Harris implement.
Yeah, one of the things that I like to point out to people is that a tax cut for those who have the most, and I'm talking about the extremely wealthy and the most profitable, consistently profitable, huge corporations, a tax cut is its own government handout. And so if you attack government handouts that you allege go to people in greatest need, then why would you ever support a government handout to those who need nothing, not a thing, from our government or from our economy as a system, especially as the middle class is struggling? It just makes no sense from either an economic standpoint, a democracy standpoint, or frankly, a moral one. Sister Alice, on the other side of things, we've talked about these rising costs, but wages simply are not keeping up. What do we need to see from our lawmakers when it comes to protecting workers' rights and seeing real wage growth?
Well, it seems to me we need to support unionization. We need to say to people, you do have a right to stand up for your vote, for your rights. You have a right and to demand a dignified working situation. According to Catholic social teaching, the wages that you have should be able to take care of the basic needs of a family. Now, that doesn't mean they each have to have a mansion or a three-car garage, but the basic needs of a family for food and education and healthcare, all of that should be able to be provided through the work of the adults in the family. And when that doesn't happen, it chips away at the dignity of people and the kinds of work you do. I mean, there's no work that doesn't deserve to be remunerated in a fair way. We have a hierarchy of this is an important job and that's not an important job and all those things. Well, frankly, it's an important job if it has to get done. And therefore, you know, you should be able to raise your family that way and hold your head up high.
I couldn't agree with you more, sisters. I have often said to more conservative friends of mine, listen, we agree that people who work hard, that's a good thing. And so if we agree that if someone's willing to work 40 or 50 good, hard hours in a week, that they should be able to live on that. That is our social contract. And if we cannot fulfill that social contract, we need to enact changes to get back to that place. Sister Quincy, we've talked a lot about taxes. I talk about them almost every day on this show. And I'd love to get your take on how we should be taxing the rich. Is it right that billionaires oftentimes pay less than working people?
Well, no, of course it is not. It is immoral. One thing I do want to just add about the minimum wage is that Wisconsin is one of the remaining states that is still using the federal minimum wage of $7.25. an hour. Obviously, many places pay more than that, but you can get away with it in Wisconsin. So the Raise the Wage Act would be really great for Congress to start with. As far as tax goes, I think the inflation, I mean, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is about to come up for extension because it is going to die, thank God, hopefully, a death. And if it were to be extended, it essentially would take $4.3 trillion out of the U.S. coffers over the next 10 years. $1.9 trillion of that would be essentially the rich, the people that make $100 million or more. If we were to tax them at 25% instead of what they are currently paying, that would be enough to pay for childcare for every child in the nation. That would be enough to pay for free tuition for college students in the nation. And that would be enough to pay for family leave for every parent in the nation. So it gives an idea of the stark contrast and the scale that we're talking about. What to some ultra wealthy people is a gift is really important to those who can't get by.
Do you want more billionaire handouts or do you want childcare, college education, and paid family leave? That is the choice this November. Thank you, sisters Alice Gerdeman and sister Quincy Howard, part of the Nuns on the Bus national tour. They're in Chicago right now. Thank you, ladies, for your service to all of us. I'll be back in just a moment. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. County Executive David Crowley joins us next, talking about investments in affordable housing.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? Welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And it's a perfect segue here this afternoon after talking to two Catholic sisters that are fighting for social, racial, and economic and environmental justice on their nationwide Nuns on the Bus tour, to be joined now by Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley to talk about something that is essential for human dignity, that increases not just the wellness of the individuals that are benefited by affordable housing, but the entire wellness of the community, of our county, of our region, and certainly in your hometowns as well. Welcome, County Executive Crowley. Really happy and excited to have you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Maggie. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
Huge announcement of a $4 million investment in affordable housing in the city of Milwaukee and Oak Creek, spearheaded by Milwaukee County. Tell folks about it.
Yes, and thank you for this opportunity. Well, as you know, that we need to continue to work to bring down housing costs. But more importantly, how do we empower families in giving them access to home ownership opportunities, giving them opportunities to build wealth by being able to own their own home? And so we have approved funding for two affordable housing developments, both one in the city of Milwaukee and one in Oak Creek. But as you know, we've been working on the King Park neighborhood. We put up our mental health emergency center and currently working on the new Cox building. But because we're going to be moving out of the current building, that provides a redevelopment opportunity. And so we're going to be pursuing allocating $2.5 million, which will create a mixed-use redevelopment in the existing Marsha P. Cox Health and Human Service building. And this is going to be incredibly important because it's not only giving us the opportunity to create an estimated of 65 affordable housing units, but it's also going to include space for Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services to continue to provide services and resources for many of the residents, as well as the community members that will be living within that redevelopment or within that community. And then on the south side of Milwaukee County, $2 million will be invested into a vacant tax foreclosed land where we'll be building 24 single family homes, particularly for first time home buyers. And I have to say thank you not only to the Biden-Harris administration, but thank you to Senator Tammy Baldwin for her leadership because we were awarded $5 million from the U.S. Department of HUD to help us with these endeavors. And so these are going to be incredible investments that's going to benefit the entire community by bringing on more affordable housing.
Yeah, it's every study that you look at says that if someone has stable and reliable housing, everything else works better. They are more able to stay employed. They are better able to access crucial preventative health care and mental health care. Their kids have better outcomes in school. It is sort of the super secret sauce for people to achieve and live in a healthy way and with dignity. So my huge congratulations to you, Mr. County Executive, and Milwaukee County and the folks in both Oak Creek and the city. But it really helps, again, raise that tide for all ships, for each and every one of us here in southeastern Wisconsin, because as some of us need help and do better, all of us benefit from that because it improves the wellness across our communities. Speaking of wellness across our communities, you were at Joe Biden's appearance yesterday, President Biden, addressing lead pipes in the city of Milwaukee. What were your impressions? What was your takeaway hearing President Biden address this very important issue here in the city of Milwaukee?
Well, you know, I think you hit it right on the head, right? When you talk about housing, one of the most critical social determinants of health, it affects everything. It affects our health. It affects the way people make money, the access to education and transportation. And that's what we are focusing on. But even with the visit of the President of the United States, President Biden, highlighting some of the generational investments that he's going to continue delivering for Milwaukee County is extremely powerful and important, particularly as we think about the health and well-being of our children. We know that lead paint, that lead laterals have been contributing to the increasing levels of lead in our young people, in our children. And so if we want to make sure that we are providing safe spaces for them, we have to make sure that we can fund lead abatement and, again, lead lateral removal. And so to have the President of the United States on 35th and Capitol making his announcement about giving dollars not only to the city of Milwaukee, but also to Milwaukee County to help eliminate the exposure to lead for our young people. I mean, we have to remember, you know, lead can cause some serious long-lasting health issues, particularly in our children. And we know that it contributes to developmental delays at the exact same time. And so this funding that the president and vice president is providing us is going to help us address many of these challenges and ensure that our kids, our young families, have access to safe housing that they deserve, but also safe, clean drinking water, and making sure that we can also remove the lead paint within our communities. And so I'm so excited that we're able to see the removal of these hazardous materials really come online much quicker than we really thought would happen. And we wouldn't have been able to be in this position if it wasn't for President Biden, if it wasn't for Vice President Kamala Harris, focusing on the safety of our kids and our young families.
I was thrilled to see President Biden and the commitment from the Biden-Harris administration to help support the replacing of lead laterals and to help fund lead abatement, because it has this completely outsized or inequitable impact on both children and families in particular neighborhoods here in the city of Milwaukee. Couldn't be more important. This all brought to mind, Mr. County Executive, you know, you and I worked together in the depths of the COVID epidemic to make sure that people that we served in Milwaukee County and in our communities had accurate information. We worked on transparency to make sure that people knew what the COVID infection or positive test rates were, and created the dashboard, the first of its kind in the nation, to share that information. Again, this idea of being truthful, getting people accurate information so that they can make the best health decisions for themselves and their family. That commitment to facts and truth, Mr. County Executive, seems to be something sorely lacking in candidates up and down the ballot right now. I am absolutely disgusted by the lies being told by Donald Trump and Senate candidate Eric Hovde about the disaster recovery efforts in the wake of Helene. And as we look at Hurricane Milton reaching landfall in the wee hours of tomorrow morning, Mr. County Executive, what has your reaction been to all of these lies being spewed from folks running up and down the ballot, frankly, on the MAGA ticket?
You know, I'm glad you talked about the work during the COVID-19 pandemic, right? Because let's not forget that we were dealing with a lot of dis and misinformation that were out there only because we simply just wanted to save lives and keep people as safe as possible as we were dealing with the unknown with a 100-plus-year pandemic that had hit this entire globe. And so to see candidates, particularly our Senate candidate, you know, literally spewing lies and really putting lives on the line and making sure they get access to not just the help but the resources that they need to keep themselves and their neighborhoods and their neighbors safe, it's just completely asinine. I mean, I think I just read, you know, in one of the papers, a report from the mayor who has literally had to go out there and ask neighbors not to politicize the fact that you have a hurricane literally barreling their way and what they need to do in order to save themselves. And quite frankly, I think that these are distractions. These are distractions so people don't people forget about what they need to do to save themselves, to save their neighbors' lives, because people don't have anything to actually run on. They aren't talking about any policies, any issues that's going to have a direct impact on the quality of life for so many residents here in Milwaukee County, in the state of Wisconsin, and across this entire country. And so we need to make sure that we're educating people across this entire country about what the facts are. FEMA is providing the resources. FEMA is going out there, and many people on the front lines in Florida are out there every single day doing what they can to not only evacuate and prepare for what is going to happen, but to make sure that the real information is there. And as government officials, you know, people who are running for these seats, we have to be not only open and honest, but we have to be transparent, because I don't just, you know, I don't just represent Democrats. I don't just represent Republicans or independents. I represent this entire county of Milwaukee. And so it is my job to make sure that we're bringing sound data to the table and making decisions on what that data is saying to make sure that we're not only saving lives, but we're staying on track when it comes down to the investments that we need to make to improve our entire community. Those are the types of candidates that we need running for these seats. And quite frankly, any candidate out there that's willing to lie for their own personal benefit, all of us should question that and be second-guessing of those individuals' motives for running for office.
They're frankly morally unfit to serve in any elected office, whether it's dog catcher or U.S. Absolutely. Senate or in the Oval Office. Sir, I just want to pass along a well wish from Michaela listening on the WAUK line. She lives in West Bend. She says, I have faith in Milwaukee County. Listening to County Executive Crowley, I can hear his passion, which is evident. I believe he gets things done. And my thanks to him. That's from Michaela in West Bend. Sir, I'll double down on that. Michaela. It was a privilege. It was a privilege to serve you and your administration. And it is a privilege to observe you now getting more things done. And the thing that I always tell people, because I've gotten questions, you talk about Milwaukee County a lot. And I said, we're the bellwether of the state. And when Milwaukee County does better and we do better for each other and our communities as a whole, everyone in the state benefits. We're the economic engine of the state. And I know, County Executive Crowley, that you're setting an example and setting the bar high for every single county executive in the other 71 counties of this great state. Sir, your closing thoughts this afternoon to Wisconsin voters as they weigh who they may be casting a ballot for on November 5th.
Well, first and foremost, thank you, Michaela, and thank you for that as well, Maggie. We want to continue to serve the people. And you know what? We don't do this alone in Milwaukee County. We do this in partnership with the other 71 counties of the entire state, because what's good for Milwaukee County is good for the entire state of Wisconsin. And as we embark on Election Day coming up, I just want to remind folks to make sure that they get out and vote. And if you can't get to the polls on election day, you still have time to request your absentee ballot and making sure that you let your voice be heard and getting that ballot to the box, to the mailbox or the ballot box. There's no reason why anyone is sitting on the sidelines this upcoming election. There's too much at stake when it comes down to our democracy, when it comes down to educating our children, when it comes down to investing in transportation and public transit and in our public health. And so let's make sure that when we go to the ballot box, we're not just thinking about ourselves and our families, but we're also thinking about our neighbors and our entire community and electing people that's going to move us all forward, no matter who they represent. Because, what's good for your community is good for everyone. And as long as we have great public service who believe in having a passion and a commitment for those that we serve, I believe the sky is the limit for our entire state. So please make sure you get out to vote. And if you voted already, let's do what we can to get more folks educated about what's at stake, because no one should be standing on the sidelines.
We don't get what we don't fight for. Folks, that's Milwaukee County Executive, my friend and yours, David Crowley. Thanks so much, David. Can't wait to talk to you again. When we come back, I'm going to take a call from one of my favorite conservative callers. We're going to have a wee bit of a debate about abortion. When we come back, don't miss it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, Wisconsin. Welcome. If you're just joining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Today, during my weekly segment with Emily's List called Sounds Like Change, we were talking about how important reproductive freedoms are, especially for young women voters, that this is a motivating issue. Folks, if you do not have a voting plan yet, you don't know if you're registered, how to register, all that good stuff, go to myvote.wi.gov. But one of my favorite conservative callers had a point that he wanted to make. CJ, go ahead.
Well, thanks for taking my call, Maggie. I know I'm a guy, and I don't have any say because I can't have a baby, as you know, science would say. But I have four beautiful daughters and wonderful daughters, healthy daughters. And I want them to be able to make the choice, but I feel like it's misrepresentative. And I was hoping to talk to the nuns about how they wrestle with this issue, because from what I got from them, I think they got the definition of equality and, equity mixed up. And, you know, they seem to say that feel that they're that you should vote for who I don't support, but also I'd like to know, I was hoping to see if there was any restrictions, because I've wrestled with this, Maggie. I've actually called the Robin Voss office, spoke to them, the staff, and they offered Governor Evers 15 weeks with exceptions of rape and incest. And Evers' office supposedly said they'd veto it with any restrictions. So is that what I can't get Kristen Lilly to answer the question. I haven't been able to get, and I don't think Vice President Kamala Harris has answered the question, because she doesn't take questions.
Yes, she did. First of all, let's just talk about that for a second. She took the 60 Minutes interview. Donald Trump backed out. So yeah, she just did take some questions. I mean, that's clear.
Softball. But, you know, the questions...
Well, then if it's such a softball, like, where was Donald Trump?
Well, he took questions. Remember his interview with Leslie Stahl where she wrongly said that the 51 former intelligence officers lied about the Hunter Biden laptop? Do you remember that? And she questioned them?
She gave him a legit interview. You may draw issue with some of Leslie Stahl's points. I'm sure people that support Kamala Harris might take some issue with the questions and the premises asked. That's part of what occurs in interviews with media, CJ. Yep, there's back and forth. Are you saying to me that Donald Trump hasn't lied multiple times in interviews? I mean, forget Ms. Stahl for a moment. Is he not a liar about something, CJ?
Here's my question, Maggie, to you. Do you believe, and this was supposed to be about women's reproductive rights, do you believe in any restrictions? Is there a week that you say, because I can't get your candidate, Dr. Kristen Lively, to answer the question. Can you answer the question? Do you believe in any restrictions? Because the Democrat Party and Chuck Schumer, right after the Dobbs decision was overturned, they voted on the floor for no restrictions whatsoever. Is that what you believe?
So there is, what do you think results in a late term abortion, CJ? Like, why do those happen? Like, why would, do you think a woman is like, well, I'm going to wait until the eighth month and now I'm going to go have an abortion? Like, why do you think that would happen? Let's just sit here and talk about it for a minute.
Okay, that's part of for the health of the mother or the baby, and I believe in those restrictions. So what are your
But wait. If you believe, is there a circumstance where a late-term abortion, in your opinion, should be allowed because going and giving birth would likely cause the mother to die or there's an extreme fetal abnormality that it's likely that the fetus will not survive birth? Like, is that an okay thing? Like, would it be okay if there's not a late term abortion, if the mother's going to die, is that an okay abortion, CJ? Who should decide that? Or the woman?
Donald Trump believes in exceptions, but your party
But then, CJ, if that's the answer, then there are some late-term abortions that should be legal. Next question, CJ. What proportion of abortions do you believe are late-term abortions?
It doesn't matter to me. You say it's so
okay,
minute.
Does it? So it matters to me. When we're going to decide to ban something that may be very medically necessary. And the problem with the exception, CJ, is that it requires interpretation. And what we've seen in state after state where these laws try to create those exceptions is that physicians become afraid to provide the care that's needed. No one wants to see a late-term abortion. The only reason that's happening is because there is a serious medical complication. And I don't think a legislature should be trying to legislate the specifics of which medical complications count and don't. And folks, point of fact, less than 1% of all abortions are after the 21st week of gestation. I don't think that's how we should legislate this at all. No one wants to see late-term abortions. I appreciate the question, CJ. I think it's a relevant one, and I hope I've answered it, probably not to your satisfaction, but hopefully to most of yours. I'm Maggie Dawn. Dom is next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.